people are allowed to say what they feel on a public discussion platform. And you have to manage right your now? Reaction to it. You have to manage
is
your
that,
reaction to it.
Is that what you're doing right now? Are you?
Yes, I am here on a public platform, YouTube / Apple iTunes / wherever podcasts are found.
Every episode, I am gaslit.
I'm having a hard time picking my winner here.
That's raw. That's real. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to After Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, it's time for part one of the 2023-2024 Tony nominations.
What a year.
I don't even know what to say.
What a year.
I'm also fresh off a New York trip where I just saw 6 shows in 4 days. And going in, I was like, oh my God, so many of these are going to be nominated. And coming out, oh my God, so many of these not nominated.
Well, to start off, as our annual tradition, we're in our pajamas, we're having a pajama party, and we're also having a little drink. What are you drinking, Tara?
I am drinking it's called Good Vines White Wine Spritz. I think it's Canadian.
Wow. I have a Summersby Mango and Lime Cider. Summersby, sponsor us.
Honestly?
Send me some. Sponsor us.
Would love. So on the track of last year's Tony nominations episodes, we are splitting this into two because there is so much to cover. So in this first part, we're going to be talking about all of the performances as well as Best New Musical and Best Revival. And then we'll get into all the technical stuff in our second episode. We're also going to do something a little different this year. I have pulled some clips from our Way Too Early Tony nominations. As you know, we record these in January for our February release. And it's kind of like a fun time to look back to see how wrong or right we are. And before we get into this, I am going to date stamp this episode because we're kind of in a weird time of a weird, really crowded Broadway season. And as of today, on May 2nd, we just found out about the closing of Lampica, which is happening on May 19th. And if you listen back to our Way Too Early episode, Steph really gave all the love to Lampica. So
I really did. And here I am. I haven't seen Lampica, but I'm actually going to continue to give it more love right now.
Didn't see Lampica, and I just want to say I would have seen it, but Eden was sick that weekend, and I simply did not see the point to see it without her.
Well, Tony nominated Eden Espinosa. You know, do you remember we saw Eden Espinosa in falsettos in 2019?
Yes.
Do you remember this? I just remembered this recently. Here I am. I'm going to give love to Lampica. 15 brand new musicals this season, 6 revivals, so 21 musicals this whole season, and it's hard to say, and the amount that we're original musicals based on, like, you know, not a movie, not a book. This was obviously based on a real person, but with an original score, an original story, not based on a pre-existing piece of media, like a very small amount of the original musicals were that. And so, you know what, did it quite work? No, but they tried something. They did something. They've been working on it for years and years and years. They made it. I'm proud, and I'm happy that a new musical, you know, made it to Broadway this year. And I want more new original musicals, not based on existing source material, to continue to make it to Broadway.
And Crows, you better pick this up in like 2027.
Like, yes. Like, I would be a really good Crows show, I think. It would be a beautiful Crows show.
Crows has really been serving us. So it's exciting stuff. I actually, before we continue on the Lampica train, I did screenshot a tweet today. Casey Mink, we've talked about her so many times on this podcast. She was a Lampica stan. Saw it like 5 times. She said, for an industry that cries out constantly for original musicals, most are pretty unkind to this one. I'll have much more to say, but for now, you have until May 19th to see Lampica, a bold and original musical about a bold and original woman. Also, to add to your point,
exactly,
original story,
exactly,
original music.
Female also, creatives team.
And a queer storyline. So,
queer storyline. Like, this is what we ask for all the time, and then it gets such harsh reviews, and maybe they're legit. Again, I have not seen the show, and they're probably legitimate. Like, you can't absolutely critique, but I saw them being very generous to, like, other shows that I feel like I wish more generosity was given to, you know, this bolder leap that was taken than to other shows. You know, they've been working on it for 14 years. Eden has been working on it for years and years and years.
However, you know, which we will talk about as we get through here with what will most likely, actually, I don't know for sure, but with the two shows that are kind of front runner for Best Musical and Best Play this year, I think this is really going to be like, hey, Broadway, we don't need another Great Gatsby.
Well, you know, Great Gatsby. But we shall see. I mean, the thing is, we're about to not talk about the Great Gatsby for the next hour because it got one nomination. Well,
should we play our clip of what we said?
Yes, sure.
Okay, this is the Great Gatsby.
Or in a true wild card pick, even Ariel Jacobs in the Great... No, Ariel Jacobs, sorry. No! Sorry to Hear Lies Love. Sorry to Hear Lies Love. My other alternate entry is Even Noblezada. People love her. She's loved.
People love her, but I really don't know that there's going to be that much love for Gatsby this year.
You think it's just going to, like, fully blank?
My hope is that it fully blanks so they can be, like, told, guys, like, you should have waited.
It was a huge mistake. I don't think waiting would help this. Like, I got to be honest.
No, I don't think
so either. What? For boldness, Even Oblizada. Let's select her. My fifth pick.
Well, I was obviously wrong. But I love to be bold. We have to be bold.
And for my almost blank of Gatsby, they only got one nomination.
They got one.
And guess what? It wasn't for set design.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. Costumes. Sure. I guess they were fine. I don't feel strongly one way or the other. No. Before we really get into it, I'd love to do an in memoriam for the 8 musicals and plays that were not nominated this year. Mm-hmm. So if we could all bow our heads to memorialize Once Upon a One More Time, Harmony, How to Dance in Ohio, The Heart of Rock and Roll, The Wiz, The Shark is Broken, The Cottage, and finally, I Need That. A moment of silence, please.
What is I Need That?
The Danny DeVito Hoarder play.
You know what? I actually, because I also knew that there was 8 shows that didn't make it. But the one that's kind of surprising is The Cottage. There were so many celebrities in that.
Well, the thing about all these plays that I just read out, already closed. Right? Like, memories are very short. Like, some of these musicals are still open. Some of these musicals are closed. But truly, you know, we've paid the respects and now we will never mention them again. Here we go.
I actually will be speaking on The Heart of Rock and Roll again, but we'll get there. Okay, where do we want to start? Should we start in our Best Actress category?
Yeah, let's start Best Actress. Let's start with a bang.
Okay, so I actually think we did very well here, and I would also almost like to give myself a perfect score because had I known the rulings of The Notebook, I think I would have done this correctly.
Interesting.
So the five Best Actress nominees are Kelly O'Hara for Days and Wine of Roses, Marianne Plunkett for The Notebook, Eden Espinosa for Lampica, Malia Joy Moon for Hell's Kitchen, and Gail Rankin for Cabaret. So I had all except for Marianne Plunkett, who I put Joy Woods in that position.
Oh, you had Joy's. Okay, close enough. I had Kelly O'Hara.
Well, as we just heard, Eden. You selected Even Noblezada.
Yes, I had Kelly O'Hara, I had Eden Espinosa, I had Malia Joy Moon, obviously I had Even Noblezada, and I had Gail Rankin. So who am I missing? Who did I miss? Why? Did I have 6 people? 1,
Marianne
two,
Plunkett.
3, 4, 5. Okay. The one I got incorrect was Eva, and we would flip in Marianne Plunkett for her.
Yeah.
So pretty close, pretty close.
Is now the time for me to talk about The Notebook?
Yes, now is the time for you to talk about The Notebook because, as we know, they got the acting nominations, but not the Best Musical. So what was it about these performances that really stood out?
I actually also want to point out, I sent you a tweet. Mm-hmm. Let me pull this up because... You know what? I said this when I sent it to you the other day, and it's like, let's save this for the episode. And I sent you like 10 other things in the last...
Yeah, we just kept sending each other a lot of things.
2 days. Let me scroll back. There was like a Back to the Future fight that happened yesterday. Like, so much went on in the time.
And I stand with Michelle, and that's all I have to say about that.
Okay, this is a tweet from David Gordon, and he said, interesting the number of paired nominees this year. Kelly and Brian, Eden and Amber, Marion and Dorian, Eddie and Gail, Leslie and Kara, The Outsiders, Mother's Play, and Merrily Trios, The Hell's Kitchen Quartet. Perfect. Oh, perfs? don't know what
performances.
That means.
Performances.
Performances. I was like, perfect? Perfs? Performances that all stand on their own right and are enhanced by their partners. And I feel like we had said on our Way Too Early episode that depending on how the ruling went, we're back to the notebook here, that the older couple, like, there was a chance that both of them could have been nominated. I thought that they would be in featured. After seeing it, I still think they could be in featured. Interesting. I actually...
Like, which pair is the lead? If one pair had to be a lead, which you think they all be in featured, so they just picked one, the way, like, Stereophonic, they put them all in featured, like, no leads.
Yes. So my actual thing here, but I knew that they weren't going to split it this way.
But featured is more crowded. Featured is more crowded. Like, stick someone in lead.
Well, so it's to an me, advantage. Dorian Harewood is the lead of this show. Who is the older Noah.
Because he's the one telling the story.
Telling the story. I didn't think I wanted to talk about this, but I do want to talk about this because I didn't think that it was important, but I actually think that it's important. There has been lots of information about the Notebook and the casting that they've been doing. Now, here's the thing. I obviously do this. So I knew about the casting before walking in. I was very well prepared for every single person that was cast in this show. I went to this show because of certain people in this cast, as well as that score, which we had heard a song from that was cut from the musical. We'll talk about that in our next episode. But I, for those of you that don't know, The Notebook is split into three different versions of these characters. Allie and Noah are played by a young couple, a middle-aged couple, and then an older couple. The two young and middle-aged couples, Allie is a black woman and Noah is a white man. And then we swap races for the older version and Allie is a white woman and Noah is a black man. Now, I had heard many thoughts of why this was the case. As far as we talked about, I'm under the impression that this is just a colorblind cast. They cast the person who was best for the role, as far as I'm concerned. We also talked about the fact that, like, colorblind casting can also be somewhat harmful to your actors if the producers are not properly sticking up for their teams. And I do think that's what's happening with this show. Interesting. I will say it is confusing if you do not know this going in. Interesting. The only thing to tell you that they're the same character is that they're wearing similar outfits, but there are many scenes where all three versions of the Allie are singing together and they're like holding each other's shoulders. And I'm like, am I expected to believe that these two people turn into this woman? Person. It just is like, I understand theater and suspending your disbelief. But, like, you're also on Broadway where tourist crowds are coming to see The Notebook. Right. You're not spelling it out and you're not doing it for an intentional reason, I don't understand the point of doing it. And I only bring up the intentional reason because the rest of the cast is intentionally cast based on their race. So I don't know why they swapped it for these characters. Like, Allie's father and mother are a mixed race couple. So that makes sense for the version of these characters. And it doesn't make sense when she's an older woman. Now, the storyline that I had heard was that, like, old Allie has dementia, so she's just placing these people. But I'm like, why is she placing these two black women into her story? Like, I just, I feel like we had the opportunity here to play with, and I mean play with in the, like, nicest of ways of, like, I would have liked to see the issues between the characters of a mixed race couple. I would have liked to see how that was detrimental to her family because they had money and she didn't, and how the class structure would have changed because her family was black and he was white. We didn't get that because that's not the story.
That's not the notebook.
But I do think that they wrote off the pages enough that they could have tried to bring in some sort of aspect of that with this casting. So in my eyes, this colorblind casting has now turned into racist criticism, and that's where it becomes harmful to your actors. That's like a very small TED talk on this. And again, I knew what I was signing up for.
You knew who the casting was and everything. I remember watching the movie for the first time and not knowing that the older couple, like, the first time I watched the movie, I did not know that the older couple that we were seeing in the nursing home was the same couple. Like, I remember that being a reveal for me, and I think that's how it's laid out in the movie, that it's meant to be a reveal. Is it meant to be a reveal in the musical? No. You know, this is the same from the jump, right? Yes. So I can see them maybe, if it was meant to be a reveal, kind of not you know, making it so spelled out for that. But if it's not meant to be a reveal, I wonder if they'd... So I think the issue they're running into is that they cast the two, like the teenage couple and the young adult couple, they cast them racially the same and then only changed the like senior couple. Whereas I think if they were all different, yes, it would have kind of just been like, you know, okay, it's theater. Universal. It's theater. Yeah. Like we're playing, we're actors, we're players telling the story. Yeah. I heard many people talk about how it's a little bit like, oh, why is it just switched for this one couple? Yeah. Why this? Like, you have to be like, you have to consider, I think, a little more intentional. And obviously, I'm sure they just cast, I mean, maybe they had more thought. Maybe they just really like loved these actors and cast them because they like loved them in these performances. But you have to make sure that you're serving the story that you're telling and you're serving your audience and making it, you know, easy to understand.
Especially in a show where your main character is having only flashback scenes. And I'm like, mm-hmm, but the flashback that you're seeing is not even the same race that you are right now. I just don't think that, like, as a viewer that's coming to this without any knowledge, it's confusing. But I also don't think that that's the problem of the
movie. No.
I will say my favorites in this were Jordan Tyson and John Cardoza. Their duo was my favorite.
The teenagers, the teens?
Jordan Tyson, I don't know who you are, but girl, your voice, so good. She is so good. I did not like Ryan Vasquez, and I don't know, I've never seen him in anything before, but I just did not believe him as that character at all, and I also did not believe his connection with Joy Woods, which really took me out. And then I will say, to me, I don't know what's going to happen here in terms of, like, winning, but Marianne Plunkett is, like, ridiculously good in this.
So I do kind of think she's the front runner.
Like, she's also previously Tony nominated, correct? I believe she is.
Yes, she won, like, many, many years ago. Let me pull up her Wikipedia here. Best performance by a leading actress in a musical. She's married to J.O. Sanders, who was in, what's it called? Bob Dylan.
Oh.
Girl from the North Country. Yes. She won in 1987 the Tony Award for Best Leading Actress in a Musical for her performance as Sally Smith in Me and My Girl. She replaced Bernadette Peters in Sunday in the Park with George in 1985. Like, she was in The Crucible in 1991.
She's been around.
Like, obviously, super talented. She nominated also for A Drama Desk in 2013.
Like, interesting about this is she doesn't have that much to sing in comparison to the just other, like, characters in this musical. She's just always, like, there, her presence. However, when she does sing, I literally can't even talk about... there are aspects of this cast recording that I cannot listen to because of...
I haven't delved into it.
We'll talk about this on the next episode, but this is the one that I listened to the most since coming back. It is a gorgeous cast recording.
Sure.
But if you have ever had anybody in your life that's ever gone through dementia or Alzheimer's, the second half of this musical is absolutely devastating. And you capture her essence in this cast recording, and there is... There is a song that I could, like, I literally, when I say I can't listen to certain aspects of this cast recording, I don't mean that in a way of, like, it sounds bad. It's just, it's bad. I cannot really put impactful. Myself through that. Right. Oh, a prop.
Well, are these the tissues?
I bought the $5 tissue box.
You bought the $5 tissues. I thought they were out of stock. I heard they were out of stock.
No, pull it up. Should I open it right now?
Right now to get your tears out. I can't believe you bought the $5. I didn't even know that.
I didn't tell you because I didn't know if I was going to... Okay, I can't even get it out properly. God, wow. There we go. The notebook.
You can never finish those. They're very important.
No, they're going to sit on my desk as a prop. So I will say, like, that aspect, they did so well, and I wish they dived more into that because we're not even talking about this here, but my main issue with The Notebook is that it's a glorified Hallmark movie, and some might argue that the movie is the same way. However, Rachel McAdams and Ryan Gosling has such a strong... acting relationship that it's like, okay, the story kind of sucks, but you guys are really selling it for me. And because not all the actors are really selling it for me, I was taken out.
Well, when you bring singing into something, it automatically gets 10 times cornier, right? Like, I just believe that.
The corniest person in this
cast. And so you have to counteract that in some way.
Carson Stewart is playing the physical therapist. And whoever wrote this book, why did we do this? Why did we have this man come in for comic relief? We don't need it. He's talking in some, like, California style, like, bro way. And I'm just like, get off the stage. I'm sure you're a lovely person, but, like, get off the stage.
Yes. This is now, not to be mean, but sometimes we like to play a game called Who Would You Fire? When we watch Carson a show. we're driving away. We're like, who would you fire? We're drinking. We're getting loose tonight.
This isn't even a full review of the Notebook musical, but, like, I just felt like we needed to talk about it there because I actually do, as you just said, that she's the front runner. I think for the physical acting that she's doing,
right,
in the background of so many scenes, and also her big song towards the end, and that, like, breakthrough moment when she does, like, remember everything that happens, is really devastating.
Right.
And when I say, like, sobbing, I mean, like,
sobbing. Oh, I'm sure.
It's they really know how to get you with that one. It's interesting because I picked Gail Rankin to win in January, and this obviously before Cabaret opened and before people kind of hate Cabaret.
It's kind of a womp womp with Cabaret. Like, obviously they still got many nominations, but they really did not receive the same reception that they got in the West End, where it's still running. Like, they keep recasting, keep bringing new people in. The reviews, again, very mid. So Gail Rankin and Eddie Redmayne, as we'll get to later, like, still get these nominations, but there's not as much enthusiasm around them as we thought there might be.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of clears the way for some other people, which is exciting.
Well, I was going to say, I think the like, runner-up here is Malia Joy Moon for Hell's Kitchen. With 13 nominations, like, this is obviously a show that a lot of people like. I really do have a Hell's Kitchen clip, but I will save it for when we get to musicals. But it's just interesting to know because... Remember when we talked about this and it was off-Broadway and there was, like, mixed reviews and then reviews and then the show was opening and...
It's like a critic's pick.
Critic's pick. And then I had read that, like, they barely
the book is terrible.
Anything.
Apparently the book's horrible, which is
I
fine.
I just feel like this is the star power effect of Alicia Keys and people are there to, like, enjoy the music.
People love the music. It has a beautiful cast. We'll get to them, but a great cast.
I will say I did not see Hell's Kitchen because it was opening that weekend and
it was busy.
I did not know. I think this is kind of a new thing that, like, a lot of shows do gala nights where there's, like, it's the day before or,
opening,
like, 2
night,
days before,
and then,
like,
a gala night, and they're separate nights.
Well, it's like gala night is for, like, the fun, and then opening night is for press to drop their embargoes, the reviews go up type thing.
And also so opening night has, like, a not a legal, but, like, the opening night is important for qualifying for Tony Award nominations.
Yes.
Like, Illinois, I still don't think has had their gala night based on the time of record. But they're open because they had to be open.
Exactly. So for that, because there was galas and openings, they just, like, didn't have as many shows available open to the public.
Right.
I don't think I even told you, but there was many openings when I was there this weekend. We'll get to them as we go through the shows. It was a very like, exciting time. And I also will say right off the top here, if you are looking to go and you're hoping to see many people before Tony nominations, the second week of April is really a great time to go. Rush was so easy this time around, like, knock on wood for future, but it was so easy. I was rolling up at, like, box office open and getting tickets to every single show. And also, like, everybody was in, except for Eden, obviously, who was sick that weekend. But, like, mostly everybody is going to be in because voters are in the audience. Like, they're there to see that person qualify for their nomination type thing. What I will say, so we were leaving The Outsiders, and, you know, I like to walk through Schubert Alley to see what's going on in the alley. Kimberly Akimbo, close now. Yeah. Victoria Clark signing for two people. And who's walking out of the theater? Josh Groban. Second time I see that man leaving a theater.
He's always just like, farewell.
And then Hell's Kitchen is right beside. And they had like a huge lineup. It was the night it was invited dress. Not invited dress. It was the night before opening. So I feel like a lot of family was in town. Because there was, like, I didn't know who I didn't know who any of the people were in Hell's Kitchen, like the ensemble. Right. And like, we're getting
everyone got cheers.
Cheers. So I'm like, oh, parents are here. Love this.
Family and friends are here.
Yeah.
Yeah, like looking at these nominations, right? Lempicka's gonna be closed by the time Tony Awards are nominations. So I think that kind of rules her out personally. Yeah, agree. Kelly O'Hara, Days of Wine and Roses, an amazing nomination for her. Already closed. And it closed early. So congratulations. Like, I think the nomination is the award this time. We've talked about Cabaret, how we think it's kind of like not really hit with these audiences. So that leaves us with Malia Joy Moon and Marianne Plunkett. Malia Joy Moon is very young. So
very young.
I think, do we know how old she is?
She's got to be like 21.
I'm searching. But yeah, so we really have these two kind of extremes on age, really, here. In October 2023, she was 21. So she's 21, 22 right now. So we have these two kind of extremes on age in Malia Joy Moon and Marianne Plunkett. And I really just think, based on emotional impact, though, again, Hell's Kitchen got a Best Musical nomination that The Notebook didn't. So
I will say, though, but this could be the way to honor The Notebook.
Right, right. Because we'll see. There's not as many opportunities. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so we're both... I'm thinking Marianne Plunkett. Okay, best actor, best performance by a leading actor in a musical. Here we go.
So we'll start right there with Dorian Harewood, who we mm-hmm. obviously did not nominate in our way too early nominations. As I just said, to me, he is the lead and everyone else is the feature. That man is on stage the full time. He's telling the story. He's giving a great performance. Like, he's an older actor. I would expect nothing less from what I saw. You know what I mean? Like, it was very on brand for what I thought it would be.
Never seen the movie. Did you know that?
Really?
Yeah. Love that. I saw an interview with him.
Did you read the book?
I doubt it. I think he's just going off the script. He's going off the page.
Great. We love that for him. Other people here, for the same thing that you just said about Callie O'Hara, hello, Brian D'Arcy James.
This is also one that they've both been working on for a very long time, this musical. So exciting for them both to be nominated here. I think it's interesting that, again, this happened with multiple shows like Marianne Plunkett and Dorian Harewood, Kelly O'Hara, Brian D'Arcy James, and we'll get to like Eden Espinosa, Amber Iman. Pairs nominated, but their show not nominated.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. And then pairs nominated, as we said, Gail, Eddie, Redmayne, obviously nominated here. Who else am I missing other than the
Brody
one that
Grant
we...
from The Outsiders?
I'm so excited. Can we just... I'm not going to get into this right now because The Outsiders did get 12 nominations, but this was my favorite musical of the trip.
Wow. Crazy. Angelina Jolie.
She did that.
Did that. Her daughter Vivian did that.
And then obviously the winner of our hearts, the winner I think maybe in this entire category,
yeah.
Jonathan Groff.
So exciting. Well deserved. He's a star. This is, I believe, his third nomination. He was nominated for Spring Awakening and for Hamilton, and I think this is his third. It's interesting. He really does carry that show. Like, this, it is his show. It's the three of them's show, but it's his show, and he's giving a beautiful performance. And it's a show, obviously, we love. Like, we've talked
about
how much we loved it.
Did you watch that clip that I sent you of the...
Which one? Yes, during the It's a Hit moment. Where they're giving their like pretend Tony speech, like the night that the nominations.
Everyone just like
one screaming, and then they're like passing it around to all of them, and Daniel like hands it back immediately. We'll get to Daniel.
I don't know. I'm not going to talk about The Outsiders here because I think there are bigger things here. However, I will say, we did speak about this a long time ago because we had heard that like snippet of music from The Outsiders. Mm-hmm. Brody Grant has one of the most beautiful voices I've ever heard. It is not musical theater. It is not a musical theater voice. He is like a, I don't even know, like someone asked me how to describe the music of The Outsiders and my choice was like rock country, maybe like a
Americana,
soft rock country.
Americana.
Yeah, probably. And I just think, one, it's very exciting that this show is as good as it is because it could be so bad. It doesn't have the right to be as good as it is as far as I'm concerned. But Brody Grant really leading that entire troupe of boys with
as
this
Pony Boy?
Gorgeous,
as Pony Boy,
with this gorgeous voice, like really, really gorgeous tones in his voice. And every everybody in this show is giving so much of a physical performance, including him. So I don't know. It's exciting. We'll get to them in featured, but as I said at the like earlier, like the trio from The Outsiders was nominated, which I think is like very exciting stuff here. Like they're young guys, and it's, I don't know, it's a big deal. It's kind of fun when someone crosses over from not really being in this world to being in this world. I didn't know he was in. He did it in La Jolla, so he's been with it for a while.
Okay. Did you see that Casey Likes had done workshops of this?
But he did it with Sky, so I wonder.
Right, who he they were was. Maybe like different.
Yeah,
I think because
was he Pony Boy? Because I was gonna say I think Sky was always Johnny.
See, 2 years ago, I'm on a tweet. Not now. 2 years ago, his program says Pony Boy Curtis. So
it's so funny, like hearing, knowing what I know of Casey's voice and knowing and knowing what I heard of Brody Grant's voice, I'm like, oh, Casey, this score is not for you.
No, it's different.
It's just,
like,
it's just not it.
It's just not like, it's not a perfect fit, which is fine. You know, he's, and I wonder, he's found his perfect fit.
I know that Brody is like a musician, and I wonder if he worked with, you know, the guys that wrote the score for this. I don't want to talk about score here because it's going to be our next episode, but I just, oh no, it's exciting when something, you're like, ooh, could this work? And then it works, and you're like, yes, this is great. I also will say that second week of April is when all school tours go to New York City.
Right.
And we were sitting with a high school class beside us and in front of us. And then like three rows in front of them was like a grade eight class. I just like need to say, I feel like it made me so emotional in the theater. There are many things about the show that like made me emotional. But something that just made me emotional was like, ugh, I love theater so much. And to see these kids that have never like seen a show before. And they're here because they're reading the book, in their class. And these girls beside me are, like, crying and so invested. I'm like, guys, let's invest in the arts.
And I also think it's interesting, you know, to go to a show like The Outsiders, which is a book that is widely read in schools, not by you, but by me and most of, like, all
the... You know what? We were talking about this at work today. I think the other option was The Breadwinner. I think that's what I read.
Interesting. I've never even heard of it.
There you go.
But also to see a show starring mostly boys, to like
the new Newsies,
and you know, sometimes we give boys in theater or boys in dance too many points, we give them too much credit, but I do think there is something to exposing young people, boys and girls, you know, as someone who grew up dancing, you know, you have one boy in the group and everyone's like, ooh, wow, look at you. But I do think there is something to exposing teenage boys, young boys and girls, but boys to men, you know, creating careers in the arts.
Agree.
And performing, and it being something so like masculine, like it's not.
Yeah.
Like
this
it's like
the thing. I completely agree. And again, like, we'll get into this a little more when we talk about, like, choreography and stuff. But, like, this is not, you're like, oh my God,
it's not
girls drooling for The Outsiders. It's not that. It's, like, this is grungy and, like, rough and dirty. And there's 5 15-year-olds sitting beside me that are boys and are like, yes. Like, it's just exciting stuff.
Invested in the story.
And I feel like if that's what this commercial property is and it gets people into the theater, I'm like, I can't be mad at you. I'm happy for you.
I'm just imagining, you know, once this closes on Broadway and the licensing rights are open, like a million high schools doing this show.
It's so hard though.
Well,
so
the choreography would obviously be different. Like, and I don't know if it'd be like raining and having a gravel stage, but I do think, you know, that synergy with English class and then performing it and having the kids do it. It could be really interesting.
Okay, so back to this actor here. I still think this is Jonathan Groff's. You?
I do agree. I do think that's the front runner here. If
it
we
was
think
because
that...
I think for a minute we thought it was Eddie's before
Eddie.
Cabaret
but again,
opened.
Womp
but then
womp
because of
on
the reviews,
Cabaret.
It's like, I don't think it's Eddie's.
No, I don't. Eddie isn't a Tony Award winner already. He's fine. He's good.
This is Jonathan's time.
Brian D'Arcy James, again, the show's closed already. Dorian Harewood, if we think Marianne's going to be the front runner, then
yeah.
I think he's okay. Brody Grant, I think it's exciting
just,
for him, but it's such an ensemble. It's such an ensemble,
yes.
too.
Yeah.
Again, Eddie Redmayne. So, yeah. I had picked James Murrell Iglehart before as a nominee.
I know.
So, sorry to him.
And then Spamalot
Sorry to Chip Zion. Sorry to Chip Zion. Anyway, so yeah, Groff, I agree.
Sorry to Harmony, zero nomination.
We've already given it a moment of silence, okay?
Sorry. Okay, let's move on to Best Featured Actress in a Musical. Steph, give us the nominees.
Okay, starting off with, from Lempicka, Amber Iman.
I had her. Just want to say.
I had picked Beth Level because I know I'm a Beth Level.
And you know what? I actually, we haven't talked about this. Like,
since I actually was really bad at this category. So
you were really bad at this category.
But we did get seven nominations here. We got seven nominations in this category. Yes. So crazy stuff.
But after Lempicka opened, I feel like I haven't heard Beth Level's name at all.
No.
So, no, like, I agree. What is that role?
Let's talk about her. Like, where, what are you doing? Yes. Amber Iman and Lempicka. Then we have from Suffs, Nikki M. James.
We really messed up on Suffs.
I know. I had maybe Grace McLean in there, but I hadn't even picked her. Nikki M. James, also a previous Tony Award winner. Then we have a double nomination from Hell's Kitchen, Shoshana Bean and Keisha Lewis. So amazing. I think that really is what put Hell's Kitchen over the edge.
Shoshana Bean is playing her mother, but I don't know who is Keisha Lewis playing. I think there's like a piano teacher. I believe that's what the character is, but I'm not. Haven't seen the show, so we actually
don't. I don't know. I do not know.
No, I don't know.
Let's click. Let's see. Hell's Kitchen.
But it's probably just going to say...
Shoshana Bean, it says Jersey. Okay. 17-year-old girl, her friends, her mother, Jersey. So that's Shoshana Bean. And Keisha Lewis plays Miss Liza Jane. So that
So I'm going to say she's right. Like her piano teacher, yeah.
Her piano teacher.
Yes. And okay. Then...
Let's keep it moving. Yeah. I also have, of course, Leslie Kritzer in Spamalot. Spamalot's lone nomination.
This was so funny because when we talked about this in January, we were like, this is a lock. And it turns out it was.
And it was a lock. It was a lock. Look, it's a star-making character. We obviously had Jen Ryder Shaw on the podcast when she played the Lady of the Lake at the Stratford Festival. And it's just like such a star-making role. You can really like eat it up. You can chew the scenery with that. And she's never been nominated before.
No.
So I think this is a fun nomination for her. And I think that's what Spamalot deserves. Of course, we've got Bebe Neuwirth in Cabaret, which I also kind of thought was a lock. We got the four, all four people from Cabaret, all categories. And then finally, of course, Lindsay Mendez.
Marley so Rivera. I actually had four of the seven, which congrats
to me. I had one, two, three. I had three. I had picked Beth Level. I had done a double Merrily. I'd put Crystal Joy Brown in here.
I know. Here's the thing. I'm a little nervous for Lindsay Mendez.
For Lindsay? Okay, but who like else do you think could do it? Who?
Shoshana Bean.
Shoshana? It depends on how much love Hell's Kitchen get, which right now, a lot of love. But I just... And as we already know, actually, Lindsay already has a Tony.
I know.
In this category.
I'd also like to say that two former Elphabas are up against each other.
I know. Two former Elphabas are up against each other. And we've got a third Elphaba in lead.
Eden Espinosa. Eden. Yeah.
We didn't even talk about how in Best Actor we had two King Georges.
Oh my God, you're so right.
And the third person who didn't get nominated was Andrew Rannells, who he didn't get it, but... Could have had three.
We also had Shrek in there.
We also had Shrek. But we'll get King George for now. But okay, you really think Shoshana...
Okay, I don't. I actually think it is Lindsay, but it's I think the heat is a little... Like,
it's to Hell's Kitchen.
Hourglass has changed.
Here's the problem with Hell's Kitchen. What if they split?
They'll cancel each other out.
If they split?
I know.
Again, I think like, Amber Iman is out. I think Nikki M. James, who is great... Suffs didn't get many acting nominations. That's the only one. That's the only acting nomination. So I don't think. But Suffs, also people really love Suffs right now. And then Leslie Kritzer is not going
to
win.
The Suffs red carpet was happening the night that I went to the Outsiders. Mm-hmm. Steph knows about this. But I saw, it was at the Music Box, and I was like, oh my God. So funny that they just do red carpets outside of the theaters. Just like on the street. It's comedy to me. Hillary Clinton there. Malala Yousafzai there.
You see Malala?
Yes, I'm Malala. They're producers on this. They could get Tony Awards this year.
Angelina or Malala? What do you think?
Wow. and Malala. Who else? Anna Wintour.
Yes.
Which was exciting.
I think Anna Wintour's daughter is involved. You know what? She was involved in Gutenberg. Gutenberg. Yes. She's a producer of things, but she definitely was involved in Gutenberg.
And then just like so many other people, like Ben Platt, Noah Galvin, Sarah Bareilles, Darren Criss, who
Red Carpet.
Like, sit He's down in there. The news right now. You need to sit down.
I think he was misquoted. I think the quote was misinterpreted, to be fair. Culturally queer. We're getting my fizz.
What does that even mean?
I don't know.
We can't discuss it. We can't talk about it right now.
I really just think it's Lindsay's.
I mean, that's the nomination that I want. Maybe the hot one that I want.
That's who I want too. Maybe the hot person to come in. BB.
Never count her out.
She's amazing. Mm-hmm. But I really do think it's Lindsay. I really think because the three of them have been sold as such a package, and their performance has been sold as such a package, they've been like hitting the streets. They have been on podcasts. They have been on talk shows like since September.
Did you see Daniel Radcliffe rapping on Fallon?
Recently or like a long time ago?
No, recently.
No, I've seen him do it a long time ago, but not recently.
Wait, maybe it was a long time ago. It's been resurfaced.
What did he do? Like an alphabet, something with an alphabet.
Yes, okay, it was a long time.
That's old.
Maybe someone was like commenting on it based on the fact that he like speed sings.
He can do a pattern.
So maybe that's where it came up again. I was like, I had never seen it. So I was like, oh my God. I've never seen it. Great.
I think he's like very meticulous in that way. I mean, speaking of, let's get to it. Featured actor in a musical. Well, we could start with Danny Radcliffe, also from Merrily We Roll Along. With that trio, all three of them got those nominations. Danny Radcliffe's first nomination with his fifth Broadway appearance.
I really thought he was nominated for Equus. I don't know why that was like in my mind. I'll also say we're obviously not really talking about these three, but go listen to our almost 2-hour Merrily episode that we just released.
They're the best.
Yeah, like I can't speak on them any more than I already
did. I'll literally cry. Also, Danny Radcliffe, the nicest man alive. Like, I can't speak on it more. No, he's really giving such a beautiful, nuanced performance in this. All three of them are. And it's, like, very, like, symbiotic. Like, they're all giving and taking from each other so much.
Go ahead.
It's hard to, like, award one but not the others. So that is why Danny Radcliffe is my winner. But let's get to the other nominations.
I was going
to
say, this is the category that I really did battle.
You're nervous. You got it wrong. Okay, well, let's start with, obviously.
Go.
Let's start with, obviously, Michelle's favorite nomination, Roger Bart.
Should we play the clip? Let's roll the tape.
Yeah, let's play it.
You know who we did not discuss who actually could be nominated here? Roger Bart.
Oh, I know. He is like if there's going to be... Actually, it's not even a rogue nomination because, like, he's a celebrity. It's a nominated role from the West End and, like... It's Roger Bart. Like,
yeah, I'm just so not a fan. I'm just like,
as you will hear in an upcoming episode, but it is Roger Bart, and I would not like, I wouldn't be surprised if that happens at all.
I know, but I just don't think the broadness is gonna hit the voters as much.
The broadness did hit the voters. Broadness hit.
Well, not Michelle. It didn't hit Michelle. Sorry, I can't keep referencing Michelle like that. This woman named Michelle, she tweeted that she said, how did Roger Bart get a Tony nomination? I didn't like his performance at all. That's like a paraphrase. Roger Bart like responded being like, why did you text me this?
The comment of why did you text me is really what sent me over the edge. I'm like, she didn't text you.
She didn't text you. She, look, here's the thing. You, Twitter/X, whatever it's called, is a public discussion platform. People can say what they feel on it.
A horrendous place. So, like, yeah, if that's where worst. You're taking your information the from, worst. Then you need to not.
They did not tag you. You were not tagged, Roger Bart. So you either have, like, alerts on your name, or, you know, the For You page is kind of, like, now it's, like, feeding you stuff with your name. I can't blame 100%. But people are allowed to say what they feel on a public discussion platform. And you have to manage your reaction to it.
Is that what you're doing right now? Are you?
Yes, I am here on a public platform, YouTube/Apple iTunes/ wherever podcasts are found. And I am saying that I was not a fan of Back to the Future or Roger Bart's performance. And Roger Bart, I'll text you about it.
However, we both did agree that this was probably going to happen.
This was a possibility. Yes, we did. I'll text you to your face, Roger Bart. I'll text you to your face.
Never count out a celebrity. Never count them out.
No, I know he was nominated in the West End. Did he win in the West End? I can't remember. He was nominated in the West End at least.
Yeah.
It's a big showy performance. This show really, what did it get? Two nominations?
They got set design, which I think I had also said that, like, that was a possibility. Which, like, sure, great.
Two nominations, set design and Roger Bart.
And, like, that's fine.
Sure.
It's fine. Here's the thing. We've talked about this before. We talked about this on the Back to the Future episode. We've talked about this every time we talked about Back to the Future. This show is doing more than fine.
The award, like, is the money. Like, yeah. The award is the money. They're making money.
So
they'll be running for years.
And not only are they running for years, they're going on tours. They're going on tour. Fine.
To Toronto next summer. Catch us there.
Yeah, I can't speak on Twitter, X, Elon Musk's whatever website. I just, like, guys, critiques are critiques. It's not that serious. Like, let's move on with our lives. And for that, we're moving on to the next person nominated.
Yes, okay. Next person nominated is...
I mean, let's go to the duo of the outsiders here.
Yes, absolutely.
So we've got Sky Lakota Lynch, who was Johnny in The Outsiders. And we also have Joshua Boone, who played Daryl.
Daryl, the brother, the older brother.
No, the friend.
The friend. The older brother is Dallas?
Oh, sorry, I'm lying. His name is Dallas. Daryl is the brother. Dallas is Joshua.
Okay.
Sorry, 20 D's.
20 D's.
Dally. I will say...
R.I.P.
That scene was, like, the way that they did
it. Okay, from what I understand, and I haven't seen the musical, I haven't read the book in a really long time, I think he dies differently in the musical than in the book.
I mean... I never read the book, and it's been a long time since I saw the movie. Do you know how? Like, do you remember how he dies in the book?
I don't, but I did hear in the musical that they changed how he died multiple times. Like, they were trying. But let me
spoilers for The Outsider, the musical. If you don't want to know, stop listening. Tell us how he dies
in the musical.
He jumps onto a train track and gets hit by a train.
Wow. Okay.
Crazy the way that they do it.
Hurry back.
Well, while you're searching for this, let me talk about Joshua Boone a little bit. So
okay, so sorry, let me interrupt you one. I found it. Dally, they go, Pony Boy and Dally go to the hospital to see Johnny. He dies while they're there. Dally is, you know, distraught. He runs out, he goes to a store, robs a store, and starts running from the police, and he kind of, like, baits the police, and the police end up shooting him, killing him.
Okay.
Which is, I think, kind of, you know, very interesting police brutality commentary.
I was about to say.
As opposed to self-inflicted, which is kind of self-inflicted, but, like, you know, whatever.
I wonder if they didn't do this because... Who plays Dallas in the movie?
I think it was... Let me find this out.
Because I want to know before I'm going to say what I'm about to say.
I think it was... Matt Dillon.
Okay. So I would assume that they probably did something similar in the movie. I think to do it that way in the musical is extremely jarring for a show that is kind of rated like PG or sure. PG-13, especially because Dallas is played by a black man in the musical. And to do that, it puts us in a whole different category of what this
story in the movie, is. I'm reading in the movie, they call it suicide by cop. Like, he points an empty firearm at the police and kind of baits them into claim. So in the movie, it stays true to the book. Very interesting that they've changed this. And again, I heard that they kept changing how he died in development of The Outsiders, kind of trying to hit on the right tone.
Well, my one thought is, like, racism based on this, that, like, did police just shoot a black man that was running? That's one thought that maybe they tried
It's all white men in the book and in the...
No, I mean in the musical though. He's played by like Joshua.
Yeah.
So I was just like that.
Interesting. Okay, that's a little bit different. It's a different element.
It's a completely different
tone. Absolutely. So, just based on the world context, it changes things currently. Very much.
Yes, exactly. So I'm like, they probably tried that maybe in La Jolla or wherever just to and it was see. Just and maybe too much. With audiences, they were like, ooh, this takes our show from like this story to this story. My other thought on that is that, like, there's really no adult characters in this show at all. So to bring in someone to, like, dress as an adult to, like, kill this character...
Look, you just like do what you do element. In Rent. You have a 22-year-old. You put on a cardigan and you're like, Mark, it's your mother. Like, that's just what you do.
I don't know.
Put a teenager in a cardigan.
I really liked the way that this was done. He sings a song while it's happening. There's a really cool lighting and stage trick. I will say, I loved Sky Lakota Lynch in this. I had spoken about him singing the song Stay Gold previously because that was...
Right.
released before I saw the show, but Josh Boone, like, commands the stage when he's on stage. Like, he really is, that stage is his when he's out there. So, I don't know, like, it's really hard when you have such an ensemble piece to, like, pick out people, because I also could have picked either of the brothers, I think, to be nominated in this show. Everyone is, like, kind of on the same playing field for me because they're all doing very similar, like, scene work. Like, it's interesting to...
Brent Comer these people... as Daryl.
Shout out. Hope you're listening. And the kid that played Soda Pop, who I think is the cutest in the cast, Jason Schmidt. He was very
Other brother.
But yeah.
The other brother.
Dallas sings the song, I think it's called Hopeless War. Oh, no. Little Brother. He's basically exactly as you described. He's like having this moment where he's like, everything I did was like for these guys, and Johnny's now gone, and how can I live with myself? I've run from city to city to city. So he's basically like on the run again, and then just decides to. That's the second musical that I saw where someone died by train in that weekend. So
what's the other one? Hard Rock and Roll?
No. No!
I literally can't even think of it. Oh, Water for Elephants. I forgot. I saw the movie. I saw Water for Elephants, the movie. I'm looking at in the San Diego, Brent Comer played Paul Holden. I don't remember that character. I don't remember. But on Broadway, he obviously played Daryl.
Paul is in this thing, but I don't see him here.
It's at the bottom of the...
Brent Comer. What a beautiful voice.
Really good.
Real good.
We're fans, actually, Brent. We're fans, Brent.
I just
want to
say...
Where's Michelle?
Something funny about that is... It's not funny, but, like, we'll get to it in our other episode. But when we talk about choreography of this, obviously it, like, rains on stage. And there are some characters that are just, like, forced to stay wet to the end. And he's one of them.
Well, you know...
He can't have a moment where he can go off stage.
He can't go off stage.
He's just dripping at the curtain call.
You know what? I like that. I like it.
That's raw.
It's giving Nicole Scherzinger bowing covered in blood at the end of Sunset Boulevard.
I think this is a fun double nomination for the outsiders here. But again, as I said in our Way Too Early, I do have this clip. But again, I'm saving this for when we talk about musicals. The outsiders could have had so many nominations here. So to pick these three, I think is really great. Excited for Sky. Like, I remember following him during the Dear Evan Hansen days. So
it's fun. It's
to
exciting.
See him like graduate.
Originate something.
Yeah.
We've got two more nominations. We've got Hell's Kitchen again. And actually, this is what sets Hell's Kitchen apart from The Outsiders. The Outsiders got 12 nominations and Hell's Kitchen got 13. And it's because The Outsiders got 3 acting nominations. Hell's Kitchen got 4. And so the 4th acting nomination for Hell's Kitchen is Brandon Victor Dixon, who...
You nominated him.
I did. I did pick him. Look at me. Look at me. Literally the most beautiful voice. Who has a better voice than Brandon Victor Dixon? Nobody. Live in my house. Anyway, so talented. And of course, to complete the quartet of cabaret nominations, Stephen Skibel. This is a previously nominated role. Not hugely shocking, but it is very interesting because, again, cabaret ended up being a bit of a meh. So,
yeah.
Still, all 4 of them got in. Exciting. But again, my winner, Daniel.
I was going to say, I think this category, even having the 2 outsiders nomination in here, that to me, as we just spoke on and featured, like, they'll cancel each other out. And this is even more of a solidification that Daniel Radcliffe is winning this award. I can't wait for his speech. Can't wait for him to thank his wife and his baby.
And his baby. And me.
Well, we're going to be so emotional at the Tony Awards.
There we go. Okay, should we do Revival next? And then should do
Best
Musical.
Yes, we're heading into our 2 final categories of this episode.
Here we go.
Okay, let's go.
4 Revivals nominated. There were 6 eligible this year.
I was going to say, please name us the 6 that were eligible this year.
Okay, well, let me start by naming the 2 that didn't get a nomination in this category. And first, a show that got 0 nominations, The Wiz. I feel like we've been talking about this, or this The Wiz revival was so longly anticipated, and yet when it finally came, nobody cared.
Here's the thing.
Nobody paid attention.
The Wiz red carpet opening night, also there when I was there. I had the funniest moment, which I wish I would have said something to Shanice Williams in the bathroom.
14 shows opened in 9 days. 14 shows open in 9 days.
I follow so many theater reviewers on Twitter, and the amount of people that were like, guys, I'm tired. It's been a long 2 weeks.
Those 9 days sponsored by The Great Gatsby, a new musical.
Yes. I'd like to shout out Shanice Williams one more time on this podcast for her role as Dorothy in The Wiz Live. Your friend was hating on you, and I should have stepped in, and I didn't. But then the Wiz Red Carpet was happening. I think what's interesting about this show is a lot of people are saying that this feels like a tour stop because it is a tour was stop. On tour before it came to Broadway. Stop. I will say, so The Wiz, obviously at the Marquee, never been, but I was in line across the street at Sweeney Todd in the Rush line. Sweeney had like 50 people. The Wiz had like 10.
So, and that's the thing. I just think it's very forgotten. It's so crowded this season. It's really hard to make your mark.
Will something ever work at the Marriott Marquee Theater?
No. It's really ugly in there. It's just not a good theater.
What a great place to do an opening night, though, because there's like
lobby,
conference
indoors.
Rooms. There's like, no, it was outside. It was outside.
Yeah, but you know, you got space in there.
Yeah, but like they had their party was in one of the party rooms at the hotel, and I'm sure many people stayed at the hotel. So it's just like it's really
convenient. It's really convenient.
Wrapped up.
They can go to the bathroom anytime they want. You know,
the eighth floor bathroom is open. You didn't hear it from us.
Okay, the other revival that opened and closed this year already did not get a nomination is Spamalot. To be honest, most iconically Spamalot this year was Ariana Grande's second home, and that's really all Spamalot gave me. I just imagine her in the dressing room every night. I just think that's where she was.
The closing night of Spamalot gave us the first hand-holding video of Ariana Grande and Ethan Slater, and for that we're thankful.
We are thankful.
Thank goodness.
How many times did she see it?
In the key of Galinda.
How many times did she see that show? She was there once a week. She was there all the time.
Well, she wasn't there during reshoots, but then they were together during reshoots.
Yeah,
so like he was any time that he was there, I'm going to assume she was there too.
She was there. I swear she was always posting on Instagram. She's back.
And
she's there.
Always buying a show cup. Like, girl.
Yes, getting a drink. I mean, she can afford it, but...
I know, but do you need that many Spamalot show cups?
Well, what's she gonna do? She'd be like, "Oh, don't put it in the cup this time." Like she needed a pep.
She walked out with it on the streets of New York.
Here's the thing about Ariana Grande: we always forget she is like a theater kid. Like she loves that kind of stuff. She loves that stuff.
Oh yeah, I just don't.
She's got a stack of Spamalot cups. Actually, when they have dinner, when they have dinner parties, everyone gets a Spamalot cup at their place setting with the little lid.
And tell us what was nominated in place of those two.
Okay, we've got Cabaret, The Who's Tommy, Gutenberg, which this is actually its first time on Broadway, but because of the classics rule, it is in revival, and of course, Merrily We Roll Along.
I'm going to roll the Gutenberg tape.
Roll it.
Right now. And my final, and I think you've chosen the other, because in my opinion, Gutenberg is not even in contention
here.
No,
sorry, I agree.
But I've chosen The Wiz, and I feel like you've chosen Spamalot.
No, I've also chosen The Wiz.
Oh, wow.
I just dislike Spamalot.
And nothing's changed.
I feel the same, but Gutenberg over The Wiz.
I was just cracking up yesterday when I was watching this, because I was like, sorry, Gutenberg, and you're like, yeah, totally agree. And here we are.
We are Gutenberg. But how many nominations did Gutenberg get? One?
Yeah, one.
Okay, and this was the one. Yeah. And the same for The Who's Tommy. One nomination.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You're not winning. It's between Cabaret and Merrily We Roll Along. But again, Cabaret.
I just need to address live on the podcast that I saw The Who's Tommy.
You know what? Because we talked about it before we got on air. You really went into like a deep dive before we got on air.
I loved this. This was my number two show of the trip. And I said to Steph off the mic just before we started recording, that's not because the story is good. The story is actually the worst story I saw of the entire trip. But because it was so thrilling. This show is literally, like, it's so exciting. It's so loud. Like, be prepared. It is so loud in there. But I, as we know, I've said many times, I'm a projection hater. I was a projection lover for this musical because the projections were used to enhance the physical practical set, and that's what they should be used for.
Yeah.
This was a light show, this was a clip show, this was a projection show, this was a vocal masterclass. I literally am upset that like Ali what's his name?
Louis Bergozzi.
I don't know how you say his name. He's like 22 years old. He was a freaking star. His Pinball Wizard is so good. And because Tommy was nominated for Revival, I do think that everyone will get to hear him sing live, which is exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel like there was so much more here that this... It's just interesting because I do think this actually did get decent reviews. And not to speak on this because we're not really going to touch on this in our next episode either, but I just think it's very interesting for a director to be attached to a musical time and time and time again. And you know what? Like, if you believe in something, like, I don't know, like, you see it through to the end.
He doesn't want to let anyone else do this musical. He's just like, I have a vision, and I have another vision, and I have a new vision. He just has many visions.
And I do think that this is the final vision of this show, and that's fine.
I think this is Des McKenna. We should say his name. Des McKenna.
Des McKenna. Yeah.
A Stratford Festival mainstay, Canadian icon.
Mm-hmm. I was saying to one of my coworkers, I was like, you know, for someone that's like not interested in a musical, like this is what I would recommend.
Sure.
If you're a fan of like rock music and you want to go for like an hear great live experience, music, and just like a theatrical experience that you'll never get at like Wicked, go to this. Like it's a different type of thing. It's just great. And we actually bought tickets in advance for this. There's codes out regularly
to get good prices.
Yeah, they're good prices. There was no rush for this, and I had deep dived one day at like 2 o'clock in the morning that the lottery seats were really obstructed for this.
Hmm.
And I knew that this was a show that my brother Tyler would be interested in. So I was like, you know what? These tickets are like $20 more than what the lottery ticket would cost. It's really not like putting us out. Let's do it. So we bought on Today Ticks. So it's actually like you found a Toronto Theater Reddit page. There are New York Theater Reddit pages as well. Check those. There's always discount codes. People are getting mailers and they're putting those codes,
publicly
on Reddit. So I don't know. I had a great time at Tommy. I would return. It's a party. I think it would do really well in Toronto because I think it's a built-in audience.
And it has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Many
years ago.
96, 97. Yeah.
When was it in Stratford? 2013, 2014, something like that.
With
Robert Marquez, with our favorite. Great. Well, we have two revivals this year starring husband and wife at Stratford. Robert Marquez, Jen Ryder Shaw. Interesting.
This is Merrily. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, Merrily's going to win this, especially after Cabaret kind of, you know, it didn't get that director nomination. Like,
I know.
I think that's
it.
Think it's,
this is it.
I think it's the writing's on the wall. Merrily Roland is about to win this.
Literally crazy because this show was a flop.
Stephen Sondheim is
to Tony Award winner.
Like, we started from the bottom, now we're here, you know? To quote Drake, Canadian icon, Drake
is actually going to be presenting the best revival of a musical
award. Yeah. And he's gonna say, Merrily we roll along. We started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the hole. Okay. Do you want to do the original musical? Do you want to list out the original musicals that did not get nominated, or do you want me to do it? I have it here.
Oh my god, the original musicals that did not... I don't have it properly. Go
ahead. Okay, I have it. I have it here. The original musicals that did not get nominated, of course, Once Upon a One More Time, Here Lies Love, Back to the Future, this is the In Memoriam again, Harmony, How to Dance in Ohio, Days of Wine and Roses, The Notebook, Lempicka, The Heart of Rock and Roll, and The Great Gatsby. You saw that too. We'll get there later. So the five nominees are, in order of opening, Water for Elephants, The Outsiders, Suffs, Hell's Kitchen, and Illinois. This is actually the first we've spoken about Illinois, but I have a lot to say about Illinois.
Well,
actually,
there was no other time for it to be. Actually,
well, that's the thing. I want to speak on that.
There could have been a Ricky Ubeda nomination.
I think it's really interesting, and multiple shows have this. Illinois has this. Suffs kind of has this. Water for Elephants has this. To nominate a show and then to nominate none of the performers, I think that's weird. I think it's
weird. You know what that tells me? Awards mean nothing.
It does mean nothing. It's silly. But I do think I also think with Illinois specifically, because it is a dance show and there's no dialogue, it's all just dance and songs, I think we still, as a theater community, are learning or are maybe unable to recognize performances without singing or speaking. You know, you can give a performance through movement and through body only. I will say, we have, the Tony Awards have nominated pure dance performances before. I want to speak to specifically to Movin' Out, which is the kind of Billy Joel, Twyla Tharp dance show, and it had five acting nominations. So John Celia, Elizabeth Parkinson, Michael Kavanaugh, Keith Roberts, Ashley Tuttle, all nominated for actor, featured actor, featured actress in a show with no dialogue, only dancing. So I do think it's interesting in a show that is as acclaimed as Illinois to not recognize any of the performers, even though they're absolutely giving performances and dancing and, you know, acting, just maybe not in the traditional sense that we're used to. I think we need to expand our mind in what a performance means. And it's also a very crowded season, so it's kind of like funky. That, anyway, and everyone is in featured. No one was lead. Everyone was in featured. So that right. also kind of is kind of funky there, but...
But it is interesting because in what you're saying of like a very crowded season, but we've got multiple people
Roger on the Bart.
Same show nominated. I'm not talking about Roger. We have multiple people nominated from the same show in the same category. Mm-hmm. Two from Hell's Kitchen, two from The Outsiders, like all three people from Merrily, two from The Notebook. Who else? Two from Cabaret. So like mm-hmm. they're all getting double triples, but these
four
shows
from Cabaret.
That, yeah, four from Cabaret. Exactly. These shows that are getting the musical nomination.
Getting the highest sucks. Honor.
One.
And yet...
Illinois. None. I know. Where are your actors? However...
It's... Let me... One more thing. It's not a perfect parallel, but it kind of reminds me of when Parasite was nominated for and won Best Picture, but got no acting nominations at the Oscars. And obviously, it's very different, but I do think in the way...
nominated.
Yes. I think in the way that... Because the Oscars are, you know, a North American award show, an American award show, they had a harder time latching on to a performance that was not in English. I think very similarly, voters maybe here had a harder time latching on to or quite understanding a performance that is not spoken. It's not a perfect parallel, but like that's what I'm reminded of right now with something like Illinois.
I am surprised here by one of the best musical nominations. It's also a show that you had zero love for in January. So let's listen to that clip.
Give it.
Talk about a show that's going to get blanked. Water for Elephants. In my opinion.
Grant Gustin's debut shot.
Here's the time. Here's our time to make bold statements that will be proven either true or not, you know?
Bold statement. Grant Gustin wins best actor of the time.
You know, like, you know, in 3 months or 4 months when the Tony Award nominations and winners happen, you're either going to pull the clip or we're going to forget it ever happened.
100%.
Nothing for Water for Elephants.
Well,
I pulled the clip.
No acting nominations.
They had no seven Tony nominations, and I would like to speak on Water for Elephants.
Speak on Water for Elephants. Speak on it.
I don't get it, guys. What did you see that I didn't see? Here's the thing. I will say right off the top. As I said, I saw six shows. None of them were bad. I thought everything was decent. Whereas I can't say that every time that I've gone to New York. Sometimes there's always like a dud. Nothing was bad. I enjoyed every single show that I saw. However, I'm just a little confused by this one. Like, I just don't know what if I saw like an off day. I mean, I'm not surprised that there are no acting nominations here. I did put Paul Alexander Nolan in my way too early, and I do still believe that he is the best person in that show. Grant Gustin, I think this is a really good Broadway debut for him. What a gorgeous voice.
Yeah.
What a beautiful man. Like, he's giving the leading man that everybody wants, but he's got zero chemistry with Isabel McCullough. Like, zero. And I just think she's fine. So, like, it's hard when two of your three lead characters are kind of just like, meh. And I also could not hum you a single song from the show. I don't remember anything. And I don't know... Again, as I said, if I saw an off performance, this is the same like circus company that came through with like Pippin.
Mm-hmm.
And
Seven Fingers. They're from Montreal.
And I thought they were fantastic in Pippin, and I thought they were very weak in this. There was a lot of like struggling to hold people up, which is not what you should see on Broadway. The best part of this show is the final 25 minutes. There's a dream ballet sequence thing. It's phenomenal, and that's it. That's the only thing I'll remember from this. Extremely unmemorable score. I don't really know why this made it in here.
Over something else.
I like, here's the thing. I was disappointed by The Notebook, but I still liked it better than this.
Interesting.
And if we're really going to talk about it, I think The Heart of Rock and Roll could have been here.
I had it in my category. I had picked it.
Here's the thing that I'll say. Is The Heart of Rock and Roll a critically actually, it is kind of critically acclaimed right now. The critics loved The Heart of Rock and Roll. Because here's the thing. There's like nothing not to like about it. It's a fun, family, wholesome time at the theater. There's nothing that is going to put you in a bad mood. You're getting really amazing vocal performances. The choreography, they're tapping on bubble wrap. Like, what more do you want from a, like, Huey Lewis jukebox musical show? Like,
which show is giving Huey Lewis more or better? Heart of Rock and Roll over Back to the Future?
It's so fun. Like, I literally, as I just said about Tommy, I would also, if you're, like, kind of dabbling your toes into musical theater, I'd be like, guys, go see The Heart of Rock and Roll. Again, I date stamp this episode because it could be closed by the time.
It's gotta close.
This episode is even out. But I said to you, I think I texted you after I saw it. I was like, this show, a dream on tour. Oh my God, tour it. For it's sure. like a perfect tour show. It's a really wholesome story. Like Mackenzie Kurz and Corey Cott at the like lead of it doing a really good job. And like, I have no real notes because fun.
Yeah, this is the thing. I think we do, as a theater community, as a Broadway community, need to, the Tonys at the end of the day are a marketing opportunity. And I think we need to think of other marketing opportunities for theater other than the Tony Awards. Because I believe everything you just said. And yet, I don't know if that necessarily justifies the Tony nomination. Like, I have movies that I love and enjoy that I also, that I don't think should be Oscar nominations. But I don't think this
is a Best Musical nomination. But I think when you compare it to something like Water for Elephants, I'm like, why was this one so much better to the voters than something that's just a good time?
Was this a critic's pick? No, this was not a critic's pick.
Water for Elephants?
Water for Elephants was a critic's pick.
It was.
But was Heart of Rock and Roll a critic's pick? Or was it just The Outsiders?
No, but they got all good positive reviews. Yeah. I don't know. Don't trust the reviews, guys. Don't trust
them. I know. The reviews are funky. But just, you know, the reviews do make or break things sometimes. Like, they really do influence audience members. Yeah, I just think we need for Tonys to not be the end-all be-all. Because we need, and we also need Broadway to not be the end-all be-all. But if we're running on Broadway, and if our audience is tourists, if our audience is, you know, people who grew up with Huey Lewis music, we need to find a way to target them that is not, you know, one award show that airs on CBS in June. We need to find something else.
Agreed.
And I know it's hard.
Pay only $25 for a rush ticket, so like, I'm living the dream.
You can't complain.
For a first row mezzanine ticket, like, can't complain.
This is actually, I think, the hardest one to pick a winner here.
It is, and I do have two clips that I want to play. If you recall, in your memory, you gave me a TED Talk about Hell's Kitchen, and we're going to replay that right now.
My TED Talk is that things that transfer from off-Broadway usually win Best Musical. That's my TED Talk.
Right.
Let's hear it.
What I will say is, over the past 10 years, 8 out of 10 Best Musical winners have originated off-Broadway. Mm. And so I think that is kind of the winning combination to originate off-Broadway or have an off-Broadway run as part of your development process. So I think like that should not be overlooked, that it has word of mouth in the New York City area. It's New York City critics have seen it and have been buzzing or not buzzing about it. And as well as that celebrity factor, I don't think we can count Hell's Kitchen out.
I am going to go Hell's Kitchen.
Okay, interesting. I do not have Hell's Kitchen.
After the speech that you gave me at the top of the
show, I know.
I'm not going to go Hell's Kitchen. I feel gaslit right now. Oh, but it was off Broadway, so it's going to be a hot show this year.
Okay, well, for that same rule, I'm going to select
Subs.
Days of Wine and Roses.
Look. And did I lead you astray? I didn't. Hell's Kitchen, no. Most nominated show. There are three shows in the... So, Water for Elephants or had a previous run in Atlanta, and The Outsiders had a previous run in San Diego, La Jolla.
Oh, yeah.
San Diego. I don't know if it's La Jolla, but San Diego. The other three shows in Best Musical, Suffs, Hell's Kitchen, Illinois, all off-Broadway within the past year, year and a half. Illinois, so recently.
2 weeks ago.
Illinois was 2 weeks ago. And a lot of people... Illinois has such good word of mouth. No one's had a chance to see it on Broadway yet. Like, it's been open for a week. It's been on for a week. No one's had a chance to see it on Broadway yet. But it has such good word of mouth. Everyone's talking about it. Because it just flipped over immediately. So, I do think it's hard because The Outsiders is kind of a frontrunner. But I also think Illinois is kind of a frontrunner. But then Hell's Kitchen got the most nominations. But then everyone says Suffs is so good this run. So, I don't really know. I'm counting out Water for Elephants again, but maybe I'm dumb to do that for the second time. But I think I'm having a hard time picking my winner here.
I mean, let's flash back to January when we had this moment of, uh-oh, what if The Outsiders is good?
The other thing here is that, like, it's a show we have really not spoken anything about, but, like, there are 10,000 characters in The Outsiders who could be nominated as well.
Yes.
I don't know. We don't know how that I think it really depends on how that show is, like, what the critics think of that show. Because if it is, the only person I could see as a potential nomination here would be Sky Lakota Lynch. Mm-hmm. But there's also, like, many.
He's playing Johnny, right?
Yeah, Johnny. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Put that guy in.
The kid who's playing Pony Boy was also, like, on my long list here. If they choose
him too.
Like Brody Grant, The Outsiders is revolutionary. Like, I don't know.
The music that I've heard, it's not giving revolutionary. I like it, but it's not giving revolutionary.
No, I know.
But yeah, the book could make or break. We shall see.
But Angelina Jolie is producing, so maybe she's.
I know, that was so random. Is that random?
She wants to EGOT.
She wants to EGOT. This is so tense. Stuck. I am now going to go with The Outsiders.
It is also on my list.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know, after we didn't nominate it for anything else. But I'm struggling. I want to struggle bus.
What if it's good?
What if it's good? I feel like when you have like 12 boys in something, like the individual cast members get lost, but the production as a whole.
What if it's good?
What if it's good?
Great.
It was good.
It's great.
That's only my only pick that actually made it to the best musical category. We didn't even know about Illinois at that point. I didn't even know Illinois existed at this point. I had picked Hard Rock and Roll. I picked Lempicka.
You knew about Illinois, no?
I knew a little bit about Illinois. I picked The Notebook. I picked Days of Wine and Roses.
We really lost on The Notebook there.
And that's why we do too way too early.
Here's the thing. If Broadway is going to tell us it's the commercial industry than it is, then this is winning. If we're going to shake some things up.
What about Hell's Kitchen?
This is more commercial than Hell's Kitchen. It's The Outsiders.
Alicia Keys' music? 13 nominations?
I just cannot see.
What about Malala?
I just cannot see This Girl Is On Fire winning Best New Musical at the Tony Awards.
They're probably going to perform.
I texted you after I saw this and I said this is the only musical in the running for Best New Musical this year based on what I've seen. I think this is between Illinois and The Outsiders. That's where I am leaving this. I cannot choose right now.
You have to pick. You have to pick right now. Pick.
I'm going to go Illinois.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to go Hell's Kitchen.
Every episode, I am gaslit.
No, I'm so excited for Illinois. I feel like I've said it before on the podcast, but I want to say it again. Like, the city of Toronto, like, helped pay for Illinois. Like, T.O. Live.
Shout out.
T.O. Live. Is one of the like co-benefactors of Illinois. It's part of the plan for Meridian Hall, which is a venue here in Toronto, to not just be a stop for tours and shows to come in, but to have original stuff. Now, I don't know I feel like this is kind of backfired because now it's basically going to be a tour stop when it comes here next year.
I know.
However,
if it wins the Tony, it'll be like Tony Award winning.
Tony Award winning, T.O. Live. I picked Hell's Kitchen.
I worry about their ticket sales.
Illinois. It's a limited run.
Oh, then Toronto. It's fine.
And it's a limited run in New York. Like, it'll be gone by the time we get there. it's limited, so I think it's good. Because I think their dancers have very limited schedules.
Now I'm like, oh, what if it is the outside? Okay, I've locked in. It's over. You've and it also doesn't Illinois. Matter.
I've locked in Hell's Kitchen. Congrats to the Outsiders as the winner now, because we picked it.
Yeah, pick it. Whatever we pick is actually what doesn't end up happening. So you're welcome to all of you that didn't get our nominees. We'll see you, Eddie Redmayne, Gail Rankin. Who else?
BB
Newirth and Steven Skyball winning all the acting categories this season.
Cabaret sweep.
And that is where we're going to end our first part of this Tony nominations episode. Tune in to our next episode where we'll be talking about all of the technical awards. You will also hear our obsession of the week in that episode. So we'll see you next time.
Bye.